안세가 나고신 마지막 부분 하레 크리스나 ओम ज्ञान तमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुवन्मेलितं देन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्री गुरु श्री युता पदकमलं श्री गुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः आराध्य भगवान् ब्रजेशतनयस्तद्धाम वृंदावनम् रम्याकाचिदुपासना व्रजवधू वर्गेण वा कल्पिता श्रीमद्भागवतम् प्रमाणममलम् प्रेम पुमर्तो महान् श्रीचैतन्य महाप्रभोर्मतमिदम् तत्रादरा नापरः अनार्पितचरिञ्चिरात् करुणयादवतीर्णकलौ समर्पयितुम् उन्नतोज्ज्वलरसाम् स्वभक्तिम् श्रियम् हरिपुरटसुन्दरद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदयकन्दरे स्फुरतौ वश्यचिनन्दनः हे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा सो वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू फॉर द फर्स्ट आईवाईएफ मीटिंग ऑफ द सेमेस्टर Can everyone hear me well? Those in the last row, is it very clear? So instead of a regular meeting, today we thought we will discuss on this very essential topic of faith and doubt. In our practice of Krishna consciousness, as the years pass, we may sometimes become neglectful of our inner development of Krishna consciousness. It's very important for a devotee to retrospect his own heart to check whether one is in the right direction. The topic we are discussing today is very relevant to the modern youth, the topic of faith and doubt. These two are two related terms, isn't it? Faith and doubt. In which things we should put faith, to what extent should we put faith, whether is there any scope of doubt in the path of Krishna consciousness, or is doubting anything in Krishna consciousness considered a crime, or to what extent one can doubt. So these questions are very relevant to the youth, like all of us, because on one hand we are faced with the modern material world in which we are living in, and we are bombarded with information through our college books, magazines, and so many videos and shows and everything, Discovery Channel and all that, with one type of knowledge. On the other hand, we are also acquiring knowledge from the scriptures. We are coming across devotees. So, certainly there is some kind of difference between the two. There's a big difference between the two. And in the stage of development of faith, in the process of Krishna consciousness, one can certainly be put to a situation where one also gets doubts. So this topic is very relevant for us. I would like to take some section from the chapter 4. Chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. In this chapter, Lord Krishna describes different types of yajnas. Dravya yajna, tapo yajna, yoga yajna, jnana yajna, many different types of yajnas. Like for example, dravya yajna means, in that sacrifice we offer dravya maya yajna, it is called. You offer the things, the items that you possess. In this way, in the beginning of, maybe I can quote one of those verses, it will be interesting. Here, this is 4.28 onwards. Krishna is quoting about different types of yajnas. Dravya yajna, tapo yajna, yoga yajna, tathapare, swadhyaya jnana yajnascha yatayas samshita prataha. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the eightfold mysticism, yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. So in this purport, Prabhupada explains about different types of yajna. In India, the rich mercantile community or princely orders open various kinds of charitable institutions like Dharmashala, Annakshetra, Atithishala, Anathalay, and Vidyapeet and all that. So these foundations are meant for distributing food, education and medical treatment free to the poor. All these charitable activities are called Dravyamaya Yajna. And there are others who, for higher elevation in life or for promotion to higher planets within this world, they voluntarily accept many kinds of tapasyas, austerities such as Chandrayana and Chaturmasya Vrat. For example, somebody following Chaturmas vow does not shave for 4 months during the year, July to October, and he does not eat certain foods and does not eat twice in a day, or does not leave home. Such sacrifice of the comforts is called Tapomaya Yajna. So earlier we said Dravyamaya Yajna. Now this is Tapomaya Yajna. Like that he is explaining different types of yajna. Can anybody say what is the purpose of these yajnas? What is the fruit of yajna? Can someone say? What do we achieve by performing the yajnas? Yajna, dana, tapa. By performing those things, what do we get? Yeah? He is saying detachment. Yeah. Yeah? To elevate? I couldn't hear. Elevate oneself? To elevate oneself in spiritual life. Okay. To get artha? To get wealth. Okay. Yeah. If you give wealth, you get wealth. You get in return also. That's true. But actually, these yajnas are performed for getting these two things, what they said, knowledge and detachment. Transcendental knowledge and detachment. By giving away this in charity and performing yajna, one is supposed to get this. So at the end of this series of verses, Krishna here says, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge, Krishna says here. That means the purpose of all these yajñas, which Krishna explains, is to gain transcendental knowledge by performing yajña, dana, tapa. And then here, in verse number 34, he speaks a very important verse. How to achieve transcendental knowledge? See, by performing yajña, dana, tapa, one may get some knowledge. But actually, there is a method of gaining this transcendental knowledge. So, this is a famous verse. You all can repeat after me.
Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninastattvadarshinah.
Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So the purport of this verse is very famous. Many Prabhupada disciples, they know this purport verbatim. Because this purport carries such deep meaning. So I would like to read the purport, and this will be the main subject of our discussion today. Purport by His Divine Grace, is Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord Himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following the principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam says, Dharmam tu sakshat Bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. So, as it is said here, we all want to achieve transcendental knowledge, divine knowledge. But how can that knowledge be achieved? This knowledge cannot be achieved by speculation. In fact, the Vedas are giving the transcendental knowledge. Even the Vedas are so voluminous on one hand. On the other hand, they are also deep and grave. Often, when something becomes very voluminous, the quality is supposed to be reduced. Whereas the Vedas are voluminous also, and the words of the Vedas are very deep and profound also. There are millions and millions of verses in the Vedas. And for one to know the Vedas, one has to have a knowledge of Sanskrit and to go through all of them. And even if one goes through all the Vedic verses, one may find them appearing to be contradictory in many places. And one wonders, even after study of Vedas, one is unable to come to a right conclusion. That is why the Sutta Goswami was requested by the sages of Naimisharanya that the Vedas are so voluminous and they are so grave and they apparently show some contradiction. With all these things, how are we to understand in this age of Kali Yuga, where the living beings are short-lived and they are dull to spiritual life? Oh, great sage Sutta Goswami, please kindly summarize all the Vedas briefly, so that you will give us the conclusion of the Vedas, which is very easy to apply and understand. So they requested like that. So the Vedas talk of different solutions to different problems. Imagine one of you comes with a problem, a serious disease in the body, and you want a cure for the disease. You have gone to all kinds of doctors and nobody is able to cure. Like sometimes, you know, when people find that no allopathy is able to cure them, allopathy, homeopathy, all they try. When some disease doesn't get cured, at last they go to some kind of sadhu or somebody. People go for getting the disease cured. And there are so many different types of herbs which can cure diseases which are practically incurable. And if somebody tells you, the cure for your disease is this particular herb, And that you will find in this forest, in this jungle. And it looks like this. Go and find out. So when you go into a jungle, you find, even when you go deep into the jungle, sometimes it's very difficult to locate a particular type of leaf. Because many plants look alike. So it's very difficult to get the exact medicine. Sometimes people get a wrong herb. And they take a wrong medicine and suffer. Similarly, the Vedas are like a vast forest. And they give different medicine for different ages. And for different people having different interests, the Vedas also talk of different type of information. Like you see, in such a Vedas, even there is Kama Sutra for one who wants to enjoy life. For everyone, somebody wants to go to heaven, there are Jyotishama sacrifices explained in the Vedas. Somebody wants moksha, there are Upanishads for them. Like that. And somebody wants the worship of devatas for material benefits, then there are many scriptures given like that. So Vedas are very vast, like an ocean. So one may get stranded while studying the Vedas. One may not be able to come to a tangible conclusion by studying the Vedas oneself. That is why the famous verse in Mahabharata says, Tarko apratishta shrutayo vibhinna nasa vrishir yasya matam na bhinnam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano ye nagata sapanta. Very famous verse. It says, Tarko apratishta shrutayo vibhinna. We can do tarka for a long period of time about the absolute truth, but we will never come to any conclusion. And the tarka goes on. In fact, the dry arguments make our hearts hard-hearted. In fact, such arguments only inflates our ego. Our egos, and ultimately we come to no conclusion by such arguments. And Shrutiyo Vibhinna, and even when you hear from different sages, like Kannada is giving, Kannada, Jaimini, they are all giving six different darshanas about the absolute truth. And all highly speculative. So, whom should we hear from? One may get confused. Nasav rishir yasya matam na binnam. A muni is one whose opinion should differ from others. Otherwise, he cannot be considered a muni. Like that. So, every muni is giving new ideas about the absolute truth. When one sees such speculation, then one gets tired of pursuing the path of religion. One feels that, okay, let me just go on with my normal life. Why to worry about the absolute truth? One may give up the endeavor. But then this verse says, Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. It says that, yes, the truth can be found. Where? In the heart of a pure devotee. In the life of a pure devotee. In the behavior of a pure devotee. Mahajana. So when one observes the life of a pure devotee, and hears from the lips of a pure devotee, then one comes to understand all that is said in the Vedas given in essence from the life of a devotee. That is why it is said, Mahajano yena gata sapanta. As it is also said here, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So this also is said by Yamaraj. Yamaraj tells this verse in Bhagavatam. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam nasav. There also he says that Nasiddha Mukhya Asura Manushya Kuthon Vidyadara Charanadeha. There he says Asurasar, Vidyadarasar, Siddhas, none of them can ascertain the truth. The truth has to be given by the Lord in the scriptures. And even when you take the scripture, as Prabhupada says here, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. He says even if you study the scriptures given by God, still one can arrive at a wrong conclusion, as we were talking now. Like that, there was one Kaushikath Rishi. One day, he was taking a dip in a river opposite his hermitage. And some people from the village, some few families, they were running. And they immediately rushed into his hermitage. And then there were others who were, some dacoits were following them. And they were having all kinds of weapons. So they asked this Rishi, did you see a group of people passing by? And this Kaushikath Rishi was put to trouble. He was wondering what to say. And he had learned from the Vedas that you should always tell the truth. So he told the truth that they entered my hermitage. So they went inside, brought those people out, and they stole all the property and also killed some of them. In this way, Kaushikata Rishi had to go to hell for telling the truth. So the Shastras talk of many principles. Some are lower principles, some are higher principles. And one has to know them, which is higher, which is lower. Which principle is to be followed in which time, place and circumstance. One has to know them. That is why, by independent study of books of knowledge, no one can progress in spiritual life, Prabhupada says here. In fact, there are people who read many, many books but don't arrive at any conclusion. Like there was one gentleman who used to come to Bombay temple. So he was very learned. He knows Sanskrit. In fact, he will go to devotees and tell them that this is the way you have to pronounce this verse, not the other way. He will be correcting them. And he was coming to temple for some months and then he disappeared. He stopped coming. So this fellow, he came to one of our devotees and asked, can you please give me Ashtavakra Bhagavad Gita? He was asking. So the devotee gave him this Bhaktivedanta Swami's AC, Bhaktivedanta Swami's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and told him, we don't have Ashtavakra Gita, we only have Bhaktivedanta Swami's Bhagavad Gita. Why don't you take this? And he saw it and said, this I completed already. I got from your stall only. Then the devotee told him, why don't you take Bhagavatam? That is next to Bhagavad Gita. He said, I have that 18 volume edition which you published, I have the whole thing with me. I have completed that also, he said. And the devotee told him, okay, now we can begin Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is not so much known amongst Indians. Why don't you take that book? He said, that also I have finished. I have studied the whole life of Lord Chaitanya. I know everything. After that, now I am asking you whether I can get this Ashtavakra Gita I was telling. So this devotee was telling, just imagine, even after reading all the books, this fellow did not change. Because if somebody does not want to change, he cannot change. You can wake up a sleeping person, not a pretender. Similarly, there are people who read the books of knowledge, but they cannot make progress many times. Because we will see why. What stops them from progressing, we will come to see very soon. But the idea is, as Prabhupada explains here, without superior help, one cannot attain transcendental knowledge. Here he says here, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is a secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. So these three ingredients are very vividly described in this purport, very nicely. It is said one should inquire from the spiritual master. So we all are leading our spiritual life. In our spiritual life, we should certainly get inquiries. Like you see, this is a world where we can see everyone is inquiring about something or the other from other people, isn't it? Like even the bird in the tree is inquiring about where is my food, where is my mate, where is my nest. The morning, early morning, you'll find, you know, like 5 o'clock or 5:30, you find the birds chirping. They are constantly making sound, like the crows or the other birds, you see that. So everyone is searching for something, looking for something. And the birds and animals, they generally look for the four things which we know, for the eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But human beings are born to make higher inquiries. Prabhupada gives an example from his own life. Once when he was a small child, he was going with his father in a tram car. And he saw a marriage procession going on the street. So the child asked the father, "Father, what is going on there?" The father said, "It's a marriage procession." And the child asked, "What is a marriage?" The father said, "Marriage means a man and woman come together, and they live together. And they get married together." So the child asked the father, "What about you? Did you get Marriage done? Child was asking. So everyone in the tram car, they were laughing at the child. So the child was none other than Prabhupada himself. So he's telling about his childhood pastime. So Prabhupada is saying that, just as this child was inquiring from the father, similarly we all have desire to inquire also. One should inquire. If you don't inquire, there is something wrong. Then it is likely that we are blindly following, if you don't inquire. So one has to inquire. But here Prabhupada explains what kind of inquiry is appreciated. Here he says here, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned, he says. So one should not blindly follow, or one should not make absurd inquiries. Absurd inquiries means meaningless inquiries, which carry no sense, which are actually not asked with the purpose of making advancement, but which are asked in a mood of challenge, or which are asked without carrying any meaning. Like one time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, somebody asked Prabhupada after the Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada, in Krishna's times, in Dwaraka, what was the sewage system, or drainage system they had? Because they had 16,108 palaces. We don't know how, what kind of system they had for, you know. Did they have something like the modern day system or something else? And Prabhupada said, absurd inquiry. Good for nothing inquiry. It's not going to help you in advancement. So this is absurd inquiry. At the same time, blind following also is condemned. Blind following means one follows the guru or whatever, whichever person, without even verifying or without even checking what one is understanding, is it proper? One doesn't inquire anything. Often you find there are so many swindlers in the modern times who demand blind faith from their followers by doing some kind of show or display, like creating ash or creating gold or creating silver or creating a fruit. Of course, these things can be done even by PC Sarkar. PC Sarkar does magic. That doesn't make him a guru. But there are so many so-called gurus who learn some magic like that, and they do those magic. And when they show that magic, the people develop great faith in them. And in this way, such people demand blind faith from their followers. And when the followers put blind faith in them, one day they discover that the fake godman is exposed. You know the story of the fox who fell into a big basket full of vat. There was a blue vat in a basket. He fell into it, because of which his whole body became bluish. So when he came out, he looked like a very peculiar animal. And he saw his own body. He was looking very strange. So he thought, how are my other foxes going to accept me in their caste? They will call me an outcast. And the idea came to his mind. He thought that, let me go and tell them that this is a celestial body. I have come from another planet. And in this way, everyone in the forest will treat me as a king. So he entered the forest, and all the animals became frightened looking at him. First thing he did was to call the lion. He said, my dear lion, you give a resignation letter. Now I am going to be the next king of the forest. And in this way, he assumed the role of a king. And all the other animals were kneeling down to him. And all the animals had a great faith that this peculiar animal has great powers. But there were many animals. All animals gathered together under the tree, saluting him and respecting him and everything. But there was one fox who understood that this is none other than a fox. So he wanted to prove to all the animals. So he hid behind a bush and he started howling loudly in the night. So this blue fox also was immediately reminded of his old nature, because habits don't die very easily. So he also started howling. As soon as he howled, then all animals came to know who he was. Then all of them pounced on him and attacked him. Similarly, there are so many fake godmen who demand blind faith from their followers. But when they are exposed, they will be severely dealt with by the society. Recently, there was an article in the newspaper about someone in Kolhapur. some so-called sadhu who was giving blessings and benedictions and attracting the masses. And then when he mishandled the woman, he got a good beating with chappals after that. So they'll be exposed. So one should not become a blind follower. Because if one becomes a blind follower, then one wastes one's valuable time. So much of valuable time goes in that. That is why the inquiries you make should be sensible. They should not be absurd inquiries. At the same time, one should not not inquire also. One should inquire. So that is the first prerequisite of a disciple. Jignyasu Shreya Uttamam. You have to be Jignyasu. Eager to inquire about the truth. Now Jignyasu Shreya, it is said, not prayers. We should be Jignyasu Shreyas. Shreyas means about our long-term benefits. Even Arjuna is asking Krishna about the long-term benefit. He said, Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava prichhami tvam dharma sammoodha cheta yat shreya syanishchitam bruhitanme shishyasteham shadimam tvam prapannam. He says that. He says shreya. The word shreya is using. So, one has to inquire about the long-term benefit, especially spiritual benefit. And one should not be contented asking about the immediate benefits and immediate pleasures that one will get. Often you find when new people come, those who are not even chanting, those who haven't begun chanting, first thing they want to know is whether they can get peace of mind, isn't it? Whether this chanting can give them peace of mind, whether the chanting can help them to, you know, get lot of wealth, can they become famous by that, chanting of Hare Krishna, what all I can get, what benefits do I get, that's the first thing they think. Of course, after spending years together in Krishna consciousness, one can still be on that plane if one has not made proper advancement. But here is a clue, what kind of inquiry we should make. Prabhupada says, when you meet a spiritual master or a superior, one should actually ask, how can I advance in my spiritual life? Or how can I serve you? Or how can I serve Krishna? How can I get better in my understanding? How can I get better in my service? These are the kind of questions that one should ask. Or how can I go from this world to that world, spiritual world? From material world to spiritual world. Prabhupada says, don't go to your spiritual master and ask for, you know, cure my disease or give me gold. Guru is not meant for that. So in this way, inquiry should be made. But how should that inquiry be made? It should be made with submission. Prabhupada says here, unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So, here he is talking about submission. There are people who think they know. In Vedanta it is said, those who think they know, they don't know. Those who think I don't know, they know, it is said. So, this is a very famous statement. So, one who thinks he knows cannot gain knowledge. He cannot be submissive. They lack submission. In fact, in the Manu Samhita, it is said, it's better for a Brahmana to keep the knowledge with himself and die without giving it to anybody, rather than to give it to an unqualified fool. It is said. That means the knowledge is not actually given to anybody and everybody. But the knowledge is actually given to one who is qualified. What is the qualification? These are the qualifications for one to acquire the transcendental knowledge. Krishna also glorifies the transcendental knowledge in the same chapter. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. So he says that in Bhagavad Gita. There is nothing in this world which is so sublime like the transcendental knowledge. One has to know the value of it. Without knowing the value of it, even if someone gives you, you will not be able to appreciate it. Just like there is a saying in English, don't throw pearls to swine. You know this proverb? Like, you know, if you take some pearls and rubies and throw it in front of a pig, he will first sniff it. He will sniff it. And then he will say, oh, this is not my food. My food is stool. Then he will take a bottle and go away. Because he can't do anything with it. Pearl and ruby make no sense to a pig. Similarly, the knowledge, transcendental knowledge is being given. We may not understand what we have got. The greatest jewel of Krishna consciousness. They may not be able to appreciate it. That is why the Shastra says that the knowledge should be given to one who can realize the value of it. Give it to a qualified person. So they talk of submission. Unless there is submission, such inquiries, they don't enter the ears of the person at all. When one hears, when there is no submissiveness, it just reflects back, bounces back. It doesn't enter the ears at all. It goes and bounces back. It doesn't enter the heart. Not possible. Like you will find a South Indian Brahmana. He was sitting and reading Bhagavad Gita. And you will find this components in his life. Like he certainly must have had inquiry. So he approached the spiritual master and surrendered to him. So he had the attitude of submission. And he had the attitude of service to his spiritual master. So when he was reading the Bhagavad Gita, although he had difficulty reading and understanding it, still he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I am doing it because it is a service given to me by my spiritual master. So he gladly accepted the service and was doing. So one of these elements is missing, then we cannot get transcendental knowledge properly. Prabhupada says here, one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. So why does one lack submission? As we were saying, that one feels that I know the thing. And also owing to lack of faith, one can lack submission also. When one does not have faith. At this junction, we would like to read some of the verses which Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about the importance of faith in bhakti. I will quote the numbers of the verses, you could make a note. 4.39 and 40, Krishna says here, a faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. That means what it says here? A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. That means when one controls mind and senses on the order of the spiritual master and one is dedicated to that wisdom that one is achieving, then one very quickly attains supreme spiritual peace. And then this famous verse, 40th verse, you all can repeat this verse. Agnyascha shraddhadhanascha samshayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti naparo nasukam samshayatmanah. So here Krishna talks about three types of people. One he says agnya, ashraddhana and samshayatma. There are three types of people. The lowest is agnya. Means they have no knowledge of scriptures. Nor are they interested to know the knowledge. They prefer to live ignorantly like animals. They are afraid to have knowledge also, because once you have knowledge, then you have to follow it. So they don't want knowledge. And higher than that are the ashraddhana. They have knowledge of the scriptures and they may probably quote them also. But then having seen mutual disagreements from different proponents of various different theories, after having seen all that, they don't have faith in the scriptures. They think, what is this? One person is saying this, one person is saying that. They get confused about the whole thing. And so they lack faith in the transcendental knowledge. That is ashraddhadhana. And they are always suspicious, full of doubts. And higher than that is the samshayatma. They have knowledge of scriptures and they have faith in scriptures also. And they may even be quoting different sections of scriptures and they may have even firm faith that Bhagavad Gita is a proper scripture. The knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is very valuable to apply in life. They may believe that we are not the body, we are the soul. But they don't have faith in the worship of Krishna. They consider Krishna to be an ordinary man or a politician or whatever. So they are called as samshayatma. Also such people are always doubtful whether this process of Krishna consciousness will work for me or not. It doesn't seem to be working. So they are always doubtful about that. Like in Bible, Jesus used to call one man as Doubting Thomas. This Doubting Thomas was always doubtful. He could never develop faith. He had always a weakened faith. So these categories of people, Ajnascha, Shraddhadhanascha, Samshayatma, such people, their inquiries are always filled with doubt. They cannot submit to a spiritual master and they cannot enter service. They will be just hopping and jumping from one place to another. Like there is a saying, a rolling stone gathers no mass. They cannot plow deeper. They only plow in a dozen places and get nothing. When you plow deeper, then you get water. But if you just keep digging in 12 places, what will you get? So these people will be hopping and jumping from one place to another, not able to develop a firm faith in the Lord's words. So one is like this, then such a person's inquiries are also useless. And one is like this. Like there was one man who was asking Prabhupada some question about Krishna. And Prabhupada very firmly told him, your questions are useless. You are never going to understand the subject, he said. Because your mind is like a dog's tail, Prabhupada said. Like a dog's tail, even if you put it inside this tube, after 12 years you take it out, again it will turn like this. You have seen that? So your mind is like that. Because you are convinced that the foolish ideas that you have are the ultimate truth. So who can change you? If somebody is convinced of falsity, then no one can help them. And sometimes people come to ask you questions only to enlighten you. Enlighten is in inverted quotes. They think that first I will ask him a question and then he is going to tell me something. And I will tell him that, no, all that you said is wrong and I will tell you the truth. And they will speak all rubbish. The so-called knowledge which is good for nothing. They will talk such things. And such people cannot gain any tangible benefit because they are not submissive. They think they know. And this kind of ashraddhana, people having no faith in the scriptures or in the Lord, such people will not achieve the Lord. Krishna says that clearly in the 9th chapter, 3rd verse. Ashraddhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsaravatmani. So Krishna says that such ashraddhana people aprapyamam nivartante, without having achieved me, what happens to them? Mrityu samsara vatmani, says they fall into this material world again. Very simple verse, no? Ashraddhana purusha dharmasyasya here is devotional service. Aprapyamam, without having achieved me. Aprapyamam nivartante, they come back. Whereas in another verse it is yadgatva na nivartante. In another verse Krishna says. Whereas here he says, aprapyamam nivartante, they come back to this material world. Prithvi samsara vartmani. This world which is a place of death, he's saying. So, such doubting people will come back, he's saying. Now, what kind of doubts people get? There are some people who are over-intelligent and they think they know everything. Like I've seen many places, people, like one of my classmates used to ask, he used to say, you see these scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata, Ramayana, all these are written, you know, so that the general masses, they won't, you know, fight amongst themselves. You know, they should be taught about, you know, this is good, there is somebody called God, you know, you have to obey him. And then when they start obeying and all, then there will be no quarrel amongst people. And they can live a very peaceful life in this world. And that is the purpose of this kind of writings. So, I asked him a question, even if you assume that there is no God, you know, we have assumed a God and all people, you know, they accept the scripture and follow it. And they, you know, live peacefully so that they don't have any quarrel. What is the purpose of such a so-called good living? There has to be some purpose, no? Even if you are the most good person in the world, you have to die one day. What happens after death? Or why is a person born in this world? And what is the so-called, what is the use of so-called good life? Everyone has to perish one day. So he said, don't ask me anything before birth or after death. That I don't know. That question I don't know. But I think the scriptures are good. You know, people can follow. Then I told him, you are so ignorant, you don't know before birth and after death, but you are presenting this answer as if you know everything. I think, you know, the scriptures are written for that. But what good is your thinking? Prabhupada used to say, what is the value of your thinking? You are stupid in ignorance, and what is the value of your thinking? So, people make such sweeping remarks as if they know everything. That is why we say, Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya, because everyone is in Ajnanata. And they are simply making a display of their Ajnanata, as if they know everything. So, this is one class who doesn't believe that the scriptures are word of God. And there is another class of people who may probably read the scriptures, and after reading the scriptures and coming across many things, they wonder, how can such things happen? They try to always see in terms of their scientific outlook. How can Lord Krishna have lifted the Govardhan Hill? It seems an impossibility. Whether, you know, it is so heavy, how can an ordinary person lift this? Like a child lifting a mushroom. Such things cannot happen. Because they think, because I cannot lift Govardhan, I can't even lift a table, then nobody else can lift it. That is the conclusion. So they don't know the inconceivable nature of the Lord. And the Puranas say many things which are beyond the range of our common sense perception. Like, for example, the Puranas talk about a milk ocean. When somebody heard about milk ocean in a class, he said, this is impossible. And the speaker asked, why is it impossible? Why can't God have milk ocean? He said, milk is so costly. So, everyone thinks that it has to fit in within my brain. Otherwise, it cannot exist. Either I should be able to understand or it cannot exist. Nothing in between. Like the frog in the well. Prabhupada gives the example of frog in the well. Either the Atlantic Ocean should fit into my well. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. That's all. If it doesn't fit into my well, it doesn't exist. So, this is their tiny frog-like mentality. Like that. So, people hear the Puranic version, Puranic pastimes and everything, and they think as if they are very intelligent to not accept them or to disregard them, calling them as mere fiction stories. So, in this way, people become ashraddhanas. They lack faith in the knowledge of scriptures. There are others who may read scriptures and may even experience the scriptures to some extent. There are many people who say, yes, we should eat only sattvic ahar, you know. If you eat rajasic ahar, tamasic ahar, they are not good for the body. So don't eat even onion, garlic, you know, don't eat meat. They follow all that. And they accept Bhagavad Gita. Whatever, many nice things are given. They accept we are not the body, we are the soul. They appreciate this knowledge. And they are probably leading even a life of saintliness to some extent. And when it comes to accepting Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have a problem. What is the problem? Envy. And Krishna says in many places to Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, in the 9th chapter he says, please repeat this verse, Idam tu te guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yajnatva moksha sheshubhat. So he says, idam tute guhyatamam, guhyatamam, it is not guhya, it is not guhyatara, it is guhyatama, jnan, I am giving you. The topmost secret knowledge I am giving you, Arjuna, he is saying. Why? Pravakshyami anasuyave, because you are non-envious of me. So when Acharya has given explanation to this, he says, my dear Arjuna, when I tell my glories to you, you will not become envious of me. Because you are my devotee. So I can frankly tell my glories to you. So Lord is saying like that. Just like if somebody is your friend, has been your school friend. Now, you don't know where he went and you have come to Pune now. And he went to In North India somewhere, and he studied and he went higher and higher. He did IAS, and then he became a collector of a place. And then gradually, you know, he went abroad and acquired many, many degrees. At last, he became citizen of some country. Now he became president of the country or something like that. And then that person comes and tells you, see, these are my accomplishments. So he will not feel any shyness to tell you, isn't it? Because he is, after all, your friend. He will tell you, I went there, I went here, I did this, I did that, and everything. Because he knows very well that you are his close friend, you are not going to feel envious of him. Similarly, Krishna openly tells about everything about himself to Arjuna. These are my glories, my dear devotee. He can tell him, Anasuyave, because you don't have asuya for me. This Krishna says in many places in Bhagavad Gita, that if anybody has envy for the Lord, then such a person cannot hear the Lord's glories. It becomes difficult for them to accept. How can this diplomatic politician Krishna be called as God? And how he was a coward boy. Nobody can ascertain his caste, whether he was a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. He was born to Vasudeva and Devaki and he was living in Vrindavan. A little bit of Kshatriya and a little bit of Vaishya. So people think of Krishna from a materialistic viewpoint, which Lord Krishna himself condemns in Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mam mudha manushintanum ashritam parambhapa majananto mam bhuta maheshwaram. He says these are mudhas, those who are duratmas. So this verse is the definition of duratmas. Duratmas are those who consider Krishna to be an ordinary man. To make man into God and God into man, both are offensive. To take ordinary man and put a crown on his head and claim him to be God, or to treat God as an ordinary man, both are foolishness. Both the people are called as duratmas. And such duratmas, Krishna says, mogasha, moga karmana, moga jnana, vichetasa. Vichetasa means their consciousness is turned away from me. Because of which all their knowledge is baffled, their efforts are baffled, everything is baffled, he says. And then he says about mahatmas. Mahatmanas tumam partha. My Mahatma devotees, they are constantly singing my glories. With great determination, they are endeavoring to worship me. So Krishna talks about Mahatmas and Duratmas also in the 9th chapter. Like that. So people may know scriptures. Somebody may ask a question, how can somebody knowing knowledge of Sanskrit, they know all the scriptures? They are very, very intelligent. And when they open their mouth, you see Saraswati is dancing in their tongue. They have so much of Vak Shakti. How can such a person not accept that Krishna is God? How can such a person disregard Krishna's supremacy? Krishna says, yes, they have jnana, but mayaya apahrita jnana. He says, that jnana, what they have is mayaya apahrita jnana. Asuram bhava mashita. They have taken, maya has stolen away their so-called knowledge. That's why in that purport, Namam Dushkrituna Mudha, Prabhupada writes that politicians, scholars, philosophers, scientists, they are all considered to be leaders in society. And many of them try to give commentary to scriptures like Bhagavad Gita. Like you find Rajagopalachari or Radhakrishnan. They are politicians, but they are giving commentary to Bhagavad Gita. There are many, many people who are writing commentaries to Bhagavad Gita in India like that. So Prabhupada says, if somebody is a politician, let him display his talents in political field, not writing commentary to Bhagavad Gita without coming in the disciplic line. So there are many people writing commentaries like that, where they write whatever they want to write and only put the cover Bhagavad Gita, so that there will be a good sale. Like that. Mayaya apahrita jnana. Such people whose hearts are filled with doubts about the Supreme Lord, how can they benefit the society? So they are samshayatma. They don't accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So all their elaborate commentaries and interpretations are simply a display of their prajalpa tendency, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, all the writings of Mayavadis is nothing but their big display of their prajalpa tendency. And Mayavadis say, they say that, shh, don't speak anything. Just try to hear the sound of silence. You know? So they say like that, don't speak anything. Because as soon as you speak about the absolute truth, immediately what happens? You are bringing it down to material world. So don't say anything. It has to be just experienced. But after saying this to the Vaishnavas, they write page after page. And volumes and volumes of books, and they distribute it very elaborately, showing their gossiping tendency. Like the Paksantaras is explaining about that. So such people's writings are good for nothing. For those who are sincerely seeking the absolute truth. Such people. So such people cannot have submission. It's not possible because they think they know. So they can't have submission. Not possible. And even if one is inquiring nicely, and even if one is submissive, if one does not render service, then also one cannot get realization. Because the knowledge turns into realization only by service. Otherwise, it will just remain bookish knowledge. Prabhupada in one purport writes, bookish knowledge without realization is useless, he says in one purport. So one may have lots and lots of bookish knowledge. And even if one is submissive, but if one does not render service, one cannot get tangible realization. You will see in the life of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada had all these three. Prabhupada was very inquisitive. He inquired from the special master, he heard submissively. Even if one does not ask question, if one is eager to hear, that is a sign of submissive inquiry. If somebody does not post many, many questions, sometimes people ask many questions and go away, they don't come. But if somebody, even if he does not ask questions, wherever one gets an opportunity to hear from somebody coming in the disciple clan, one wants attentively hear and one derives joy in hearing, that means he has a symptom of inquiring tendency. That means instead of he inquiring, somebody else is inquires for him and he gets the answers when one hears like that. So that eagerness to hear the wisdom of the scriptures is very important. Like that. And one may be submissive also. And Prabhupada was submissive to his spiritual master. And he took his instructions as his life and soul. As he says here, satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. He says, such a profound sentence. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. One may make advancement in spiritual life in various ways. One is by subduing the mind and resisting the temptation and sublimating the carnal pressures. One may try to advance in spiritual life. And one can advance to some extent, but not to the extent that one can advance when one gets the good wishes of the spiritual master. One can make much faster and very rapid advancement when one satisfies the spiritual master. That's why he says it's the secret of advancement, he says here. Than one's own independent endeavor to advance. That's why he says here. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. That is why there are so many types of services kept. Like Paricharya means personal service to the spiritual master. Or worshipping deity or preaching, all this is service. So Rupa Goswami Pada in his 64 principles, he begins with the first one. Adav Guru Pada Ashray. That's the first one. First one should take shelter of a spiritual master. And then he says, Saddharma Pritcha. Means one should inquire submissively about the absolute truth. So we have to beg for the bhakti jnan or the sambandha jnan. Sambandha jnan means the knowledge of the relationship of the soul to God. One should hear that knowledge. And when one hears the sambandha jnan, that the jiva does not belong to this world. He belongs to the spiritual world. Unfortunately, he is wandering in the material world. And his relationship is actually with the Lord. So the knowledge actually awakens one's Krishna consciousness. One should hear that knowledge. And then it says, Vishnambena Guru Seva. Then one should engage in the service of the spiritual master. So, all these three are covered, isn't it? Adav Guru Padashray, Saddharma Pritcha, Vishnambena. There's one more. What is the other one? So, these are all actually coming in those 64 principles which Rupa Goswami gives. Then one can make advancement. And in this next verse, Krishna is telling, what is the fruit of that transcendental knowledge? that one gets from the spiritual master. What is the fruit he says here? Very important verse.
Yajñātvāna punarmoham evam yāsasi pāndava yena bhūtānya sheshāni drakṣyasyātman jathomayi.
He says here, having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into into illusion, such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. So this is the benefit that one gets by surrendering to a spiritual master. When one gets the knowledge, then that knowledge actually helps one to see everyone as a part and parcel of Krishna and all the living beings resting on Krishna. When one sees in that manner, then one develops love for every living entity. So in the importance of faith, there are many verses. One is this 4.39 to 40, which I read a few minutes ago. And 9.3 I said about Ashraddha Dhana Purusha, that was. And there is 17.28. Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says there, anything done as sacrifice, charity or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asat and is useless both in this life and in the next. That means yajna, dana, tapa, none of these things should be done without faith. They should be done with faith. So here in the 17th chapter Krishna explains how these activities can be done in goodness, passion and ignorance. If you give someone something selflessly, without expecting anything in return, that is in goodness. If you give someone something with the idea of gaining a favor from them at a later time, then it is in mode of passion, like that. If someone gives something that is not beneficial to oneself or others, but someone is giving them, just like a person who is drinking liquor in a liquor shop, if somebody else comes, he says, you also take it. That is a tamaguna charity. Giving a charity of liquor to another person. So, this is one example of charity, giving in charity. So, how it should be given? So, he says that if all these things are given without faith in the Supreme Lord, if you do yajna, dana, tapa without faith in the Supreme Lord, then he says, that is called asat and it is useless, both in this life and in the next, he says. So, most of the people who do social service, without including God into picture. So, Krishna calls it as asat here. In this life or the next, it cannot give much lasting benefit for the people. Anyone who says, I am an atheist, but I do service to people, his service is disservice than being service. It says that. And again, 18.70-71. Krishna says here, and I declare that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours, which means Krishna Arjuna, worships me by his intelligence, and one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. In 9.3 purport, also Prabhupada makes one sentence, it is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. So, the doubts are compared to demons. Like Arjuna uses the word Madhusudana. Oh Krishna, just as you kill the demon Madhu, similarly please destroy my doubts and dispel my illusion. He is praying. So, one can pray to the Lord to dispel the doubts. Now, we read about the importance of faith in the process of bhakti. You know, there are many stages in the path of bhakti. Adav Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. On the first step, Adav Shraddha means it is not just some kind of preliminary faith in God. The Adav Shraddha is faith in the supremacy of Krishna and in the process of devotional service. One should have a faith that amongst all the paths like Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, Kundalini Yoga, whatever yogas one has heard of, the best yoga is bhakti yoga. One is convinced. and I like this path, and this is a true path, and if I follow this path, this will take me to the ultimate end, Krishna Prem. I can achieve this ultimate destination. Especially for all of us, it's very important to have this faith. Because we are chanting 16 rounds every day, following the regulative principles. And if one is not developing this kind of faith, then one may be just dragging along or coasting along in the spiritual life without gaining much substantial progress. One has to develop firm faith in that. This process of Bhakti Yoga is wonderful. And it is unfolding higher and higher understanding and realizations. And then it is taking me closer and closer to Vaishnavasam Krishna. In this way, it has to bring us to the point of Krishna Prema one day. To achieve. This is called the Adav Shraddha. Krishna is the Supreme Master and we all are His children, we all are His servants. So then that Adav Shraddha can develop into then Sadh Sangha Bhajana Kriya and it all can, all those things can come. Now, although we emphasize so much on the importance of faith and the danger of doubting, we should not doubt. At the same time, it's almost equally important to say about the danger of blind faith and the importance of doubting. In Prabhupada writes in one of the Bhagavatam verses, I think it's in translation only, 3.26.30. Doubt is a function of intelligence, Prabhupada says. That means one who has intelligence should get some doubt. If one doesn't get doubt, something wrong. So is there any benefit of doubting? Can we think in some way how a doubt can be beneficial or important in the spiritual life? You can think of. Doubting is important because without doubting, one can be led to blind faith. Prabhupada writes in one of the purports, this is I think Bhagavad Gita, 10.4-5 purport. In this purport, Prabhupada is writing, nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with logic and with, I think, reason, I think. Yeah. I'll just check it. 10 point. Yeah. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. He's saying. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. So he says, slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. See, this is also from Bhagavad Gita 18.63 purport. He's saying, before surrendering, one is free to inquire on this subject as far as the intelligence goes. Yeah. Before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on this subject as far as the intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is 18.63. So Prabhupada is saying here, so wonderful, such a wonderful thing. Why he is writing about these things here? Because yathechasi tata guru, Krishna has said to Arjuna, after speaking the whole Bhagavad Gita. Okay, Arjuna, now whatever I wanted to tell you, finished. I have spoken Bhagavad Gita now. Now he says, vimarshayena, he says. Vimarsha means, try to analyze what I spoke to you. And after analyzing, yathechasi tata guru. Do whatever you want. Do as you like. So here, Prabhupada is saying, as you like, you may act. Indicate that God does not interfere with the little independence of the living entity. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has explained in all respects how one can elevate his living condition. The best advice imparted to Arjuna is to surrender into the super soul seated within his heart. By right discrimination, one should agree to act according to the order of the super soul. That will help one become situated constantly in Krishna consciousness, the highest professional stage of human life. Arjuna is being directly ordered by the Personality of Godhead to fight. Surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in the best interest of the living entities. It is not for the interest of the Supreme. And then he says this, before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on this subject as far as the intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that means one is allowed to analyze, discriminate, understand, inquire, again take a second look into what one heard. And nothing wrong in that. Generally, we will find the students who learn spirituality, they have some of the most common doubts like this. So all of a sudden they fear that I am doing all these rituals. Is it necessary? Am I supposed to be doing all these things? I am after all an engineer. Why should I wear dhoti kurta? Why should I dance? Why should I sing these mantras? Why should I do all these pujas? So some people who don't have a firm footing in spiritual life, they suddenly one morning they get a doubt like this. But that is because of lack of reading. If one does not read spiritual books regularly, then one is put into illusion. One becomes covered over by illusion. And one, yes, it's very easy to understand, because you think you are engineer. Which is the true identity? I am engineer is true identity, or I am Krishna Das is true identity? Which is the true identity? Yeah, you are a servant of Krishna. But because you are not reading regularly and hearing regularly, all of a sudden one fine morning, why am I doing all these things? I should be doing engineering. That means you are more satisfied with the temporary life. So such unnecessary doubts come in the crop into the mind. Similarly, sometimes people, students, they read the science journals, science books and everything, and also they took a look in the scriptures, what the scriptures say. Okay, scientists are saying like this, scriptures are saying like that. Which of the two could be true? And they have taken to spiritual life because many times they come to understand that the scriptures are also saying something that makes sense, that appears to be logical and reasonable. So then they accept it. But then they haven't accepted it wholeheartedly. They accepted the scripture partially. So every time the scripture says something, they go and verify with the scientists. So do you all agree with what scripture says? And the scientist says no, they become little disturbed by that. That is why we have to know the difference between blind faith and reasonable faith. There was an article in BTG about this. Blind faith and reasonable faith. So the article says like this. It says, begins with saying this. That in this world, we cannot say even the material knowledge that we acquire, it is not found by us. We always receive it from somebody. For example, all the knowledge that you gain from science or history or geography, where do you gain it from? You gain it from the books. The books are written by somebody. And some of them are current knowledge, which are seeable or perceivable, but there are many knowledge given to us which are actually not perceivable. Like the school history books say that, you know, Gandhi existed. So we believe it because the book says so. And how much the history can go? Maybe 200 years, 300 years, 400 years. And beyond that, history cannot go. Then they have to depend on some traveler like Yuan Chuang or somebody. Yuan Zhang and Chinese traveler. They have left some writings. And we don't know how much speculation is there in that and how much is true. We don't know. Or you have to depend on Mohenjo-daro Harappa civilization from what you have dug out of the ground. And you have to do some carbon dating to find out the dates. And there are statistics is one of the most famous fallacious mathematics. They say statistics are probability means fallacious mathematics. And the difference in age can be logarithmic. They will say, this stone must have existed either 10 years ago or 10 power 6 years ago. It's like that. The difference can be, because it can be logarithmic difference. Like that. So, then you are putting faith in the historians, isn't it? Who are giving you knowledge. We have to put faith in someone. You will see like that. In any field of knowledge, we have to put faith in someone. Like that. So, the author writes like this. He says, imagine that you are a well-educated scientist, any one of you here, and you are going to a place like America, and you are finding on either side of the road there are huge concrete buildings, and there are wonderful transportation systems, and there are wide roads, there are telephonic systems, computer systems, communication systems, everything well organized, very nice. And you land up in the middle of the road, and somebody comes there, a wild-eyed man comes, and throws a book in front of you. Take it. And then you open the book and see. And the book says, that all these things which you see, you know, this kind of, you know, everything that you see, everything came from an explosion, you know, a big bang or whatever. So how much will you believe if you are an educated man? If you are an educated man, you know that the transportation systems, communication systems, telephonic systems, and all these big architectural buildings and all these things, so much of intelligence has gone into all these things. So he also says that, imagine that somebody from Congo Forest arrives there in the same American country, is coming in the middle, and this violent man goes to him and tells him that, do you know all these concrete buildings, how they came? Just like the hills are existing in the forest, one after another, like a cascade. Similarly, all these buildings also were existing since time immemorial. And maybe the Congo forest man may believe him. He may not worry so much about the architecture and things like that. But an educated, intelligent man will never put faith. Because he can see the truth better than the novice who is coming from the forest. So, the more you are knowledgeable in material life, the more you will be forced to accept God. You will see that from the way the things are existing. So, he is saying there that in our body there are 33 trillion cells in our body. And each cell is far more complex than New York City, with all its telephonic and communication system, computer system, all the systems. It's far more complicated. And there are 33 trillion such cells in the body. Now if somebody tells you this came by chance, so the choice is yours whether you want to put faith in him or not. Isn't it? So, we can have a reasonable faith. It's a reasonable faith to think that just as the New York City is designed by not one or two men, but many, many intelligent men. Every system is designed by one man, or more men. Many, many intelligences have come together to do that. Similarly, a giant brain would be required to make this complex body, or this complex universe. So that's a reasonable faith. It's not a blind faith. So we should be able to distinguish between blind faith and reasonable faith. And in the Shastras also we can see, Shastras say that we have limitation. Like the four defects we know, imperfect senses, to commit mistakes, to be put into illusion and cheating tendency. And because of these things, we cannot perceive many things even within this world, within the range of this material world. We cannot perceive. So when we understand the limitation of the senses, we become submissive. And then we gain a faith that yes, there are things at a higher realm which can exist. It is certainly possible. And there are different dimensions existing. From our own limited dimension, we cannot perceive everything. Just like, you know, somebody in two dimension cannot see something in three dimension. Somebody in third dimension cannot see somebody something in fourth dimension. Einstein, to some extent, talked about dimensions. So he was telling time is the fourth dimension, he said. He said, for example, X, Y, Z. If you go in three axes, so you will reach the bank of a lake, and then you go there. If you are in the sky flying in a plane, X, Y, Z, you go down, and then you reach that point, and then you can drink some water. Again and again, you know, minus X, minus Y, minus Z. Then you come back to the same point, and then you can go back. He said again, if there is a tiger in the forest, he also comes X, Y, and then he will reach the same point where you are there, isn't it? Where you are drinking water, so the tiger can eat you up. But if you accept T as a higher dimension, X, Y, Z and T, then you may come to the same point and tiger may come to the same point, but you may come at two different times, so you may be spared. Isn't it? So, in that way he included time as a fourth dimension. But then he concluded that there could be many, many more dimensions that we cannot perceive. There are multiple dimensions in this universe that we cannot have even any access. So, many great scientists have understood that as we are putting things under a microscope and watching through the electron microscope to understand what the things are, similarly we are also put under a microscope by higher beings and being watched by them. Our activities are being watched by them. Many great personalities have understood that. So, in this way there are many, many dimensions existing. As we are more and more advanced, the subtler and subtler things become revealed. And one will understand how limited we are, how tiny we are, like the frog in the well. One can understand that. When Sovatra Swami came to Pune, he was giving a beautiful example. He was telling, if you draw a square on a drawing sheet, you just draw a square, and you draw a picture of a man inside the square, sleeping. Another man's picture you draw outside the square. So now this outside man is trying to see the inside man. If they exist in only two dimensions, they cannot see. Isn't it? Outside man cannot know what the man inside the square is doing. So inside man may be sleeping, or he may be eating, or watching a TV. But the man outside cannot see. But you can see both. You can see what the outside man is trying to do, and you can also see the man inside the house. Correct? So you have the ability to see both. Similarly, he said, this is a 3D person able to observe the 2D platform. Similarly, he said, all of us, we are in 3D world existing now. So now we think, now I have gone into my room, I have bolted the door, now I can do whatever I want. But then the demigods can observe people who are outside the room, and they can observe you also. Because they are existing in a higher dimension. That is why in the 6th canto of Bhagavatam, Yamadutas are talking about 12 types of sakshis. Like the land, and the water, and the sun, and the stars, and the sky, and the directions, and the demigods, and the super soul. Like that, they are talking about 12 sakshis, witnesses, who are observing our movements like that. And there are multiple dimensions like that. Not only the demigods are observing us, and demigods are also being observed by the Lord Himself, directly in a much, much higher spiritual dimension. So in this way, when we come to understand the higher dimensions existing, we understand how puny we are. In fact, that understanding of how puny we are, how insignificant we are, helps us to become submissive. But still, Prabhupada says, even after we accept our insignificance, before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on the subject. As far as the intelligence goes, that is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is why one should not have blind faith, but one should have a reasonable faith. At the same time, one should not have a blind doubt. We should have a reasonable doubt. Blind doubt means, like if somebody says, you know, I don't believe soul can exist. Why do you not believe? Because I can't see. There are many people who say like that. There are so many material things which you can't see. You can't see alpha rays, beta rays, gamma rays, positive rays. You can't see any of them. Our visible range is so narrow. So tiny and so narrow. There are so many things existing around us. Right now, there are hundreds of TV channel programs going on all around us. Fortunately, we can't see them now. Isn't it? By the mercy of God. Isn't it? So God has given us only eyes, which cannot perceive all of them like that. Unless you have a television tube to, you know, to telecast it. So there are many things existing like that, around us which we cannot see with our naked eyes. They are all material things. If you can't see material things, what to speak of a spiritual thing like a soul to see? So, one's doubt also should not be a blind doubt. It should be a reasonable doubt. So when it is a blind doubt, it becomes an absurd inquiry, which we were talking in the beginning. It becomes an absurd inquiry when one's doubt is a blind doubt or a useless doubt, good for nothing doubt. So our doubt should be a reasonable doubt. In fact, you find Parikshit Maharaj asking Sukadeva Goswami so many doubts in Bhagavatam. Like, you know, he attentively hears Sukadeva Goswami and then he inquires. You will find in Krishna book also Prabhupada quoting many questions. For example, the Agasura pastime happened. After this Agasura pastime was finished, that was Balram's appearance day. So Balram actually remained at home. He didn't go. So on that day, the Brahma Vimohan Leela takes place. And then for 1 year, all the coward boys are kept in like a sort of Yoga Nidra by Brahmaji inside a cave. And then Brahma goes to his planet and comes back. After which, during that time only Krishna performs the Brahma Vimohan Leela and everything. And then the coward boys are again revived and all those things happen. So Parikshit Maharaj is very attentively hearing all that. And he's asking what happened during that 1 year. Then Sukadeva Goswami explains that. Throughout Krishna book you will find, throughout Bhagavatam you will find Parikshit Maharaj putting a break and asking questions in between. Why this happened like this? Why that happened? So It has to be, the doubt also should be a very intelligent doubt. Like for example, when Shukadeva Goswami is telling Parikshit that Krishna was performing rasa dance with the gopis, then immediately Parikshit had a question. Oh great sage, Suvrata means, oh great brahmachari, Shukadeva Goswami. So you are brahmachari but you are talking subjects which are appearing to be little controversial. You are talking about Krishna dancing with young girls. Certainly you are brahmachari, your words cannot go wrong. And then he is saying, oh, great soul, Krishna is called as Aptakama. He is fully satisfied in himself. He is Atmaram. And he is called as Yadupati. He is coming in the Yadukul, which is a very great lineage. And how can such a lord perform Jugupsitam, such an abominable activity, like dancing with so many girls, and some of them are other man's wives. How can the Lord do like that? Please kindly clarify this question. In fact, the Lord is supposed to be a personification of all religious principles. How can such a Lord perform such an activity that will mislead the masses? Please kindly clarify this question. So he certainly asked question to Sukadeva Goswami. Not that he kept mum afraid that he will be chastised. He openly asked the question. And Sukadeva Goswami also told him, many, many answers he told them. How Krishna was only an 8-year-old boy, and some of the gopis were already 12, 13 years old at that time. And Krishna danced with them in their spiritual bodies, not with their external material bodies. And then he said, the great sages and saints, they carry Krishna in their hearts, and they are wandering all around the globe, even in the material nature, without getting contaminated. And on the contrary, they become purified by walking all around the globe and preaching to the masses. How then can Lord be contaminating to the gopis? Or Lord get contaminated by the gopis? He asked the question. So in this way, Shukadeva Goswami clarifies his answer to all the questions of Parikshit Maharaj. Similarly, you will find Bhagavad Gita is also question and answer. Question and answer you will find. But you will always find Arjuna asking submissive questions. Like Krishna is telling Arjuna, my dear Arjun, bahuni me vyatitani janmani tavacharjuna tanjaham veda sarvani natpam veta parantapa. So Krishna says this to Arjuna. In that chapter if you see, he says, imam vivasvate yogam proktavanaham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manurikshvakave bravita. He says, my dear Arjun, I gave this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita long ago. I gave it to Vivaswan, who is the presiding deity of the sun. And he gave it to, Vivaswan gave it to Manu. Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. So, he gave it to Ikshvaku, he says. And then Arjuna heard it, he said, my dear Krishna, you can repeat this verse, very famous verse. Aparam bhavato janma. What is the next line? Aparam bhavato janma. Param. Param janma vivasvataha. Katametad vijaniyam. Swamadau proktavaniti. My dear Krishna, Vivaswan is senior by birth to you. And you are born at the same time as me. And Vivaswan was born long, long ago. How is it that you gave knowledge to him? Just like if one of you say to one of your friends that I gave this knowledge to my great-grandfather. Will it make any sense? So Arjuna had a similar question. How did Krishna, you gave knowledge to him? He is so senior by birth to you. And then Krishna said. So here you will see Arjuna is asking, katametad vijaniyam. Please tell me Krishna, how am I to understand the truth that you are saying? He never said, Krishna, what is this nonsense you are speaking? Doesn't make any sense. He didn't say like that. Katam yetat vijaniyam. How am I to understand? That means whatever you are saying, Krishna, must be true. You cannot tell lies. But I don't know why I am not able to understand. Please tell me how am I to understand. This is the meaning of submissive inquiry. Then one can understand. So having a doubt is not condemned. We can surely have a doubt. But the doubt should be sensible, meaningful. And even if it is not sensible, if we have it, we should not harbor it. Because doubts are like demons. Better we open and ask, and by asking like that, in a submissive mood, one can get answers to one's questions. When the doubts are dispelled, then one becomes free from the demon of doubt. When Lord clears the doubt, then one can progress very swiftly in the path of Krishna consciousness, and one can develop faith. So there are six solutions how to develop faith and destroy doubts. This is a call for action for today. So these things you can contemplate deeply when you go back. First thing, associate with faithful devotees. Associate with faithful devotees. Second, cleanse the heart of all the material dirt that causes doubt by chanting Hare Krishna and follow the Krishna consciousness process. That means our doubts are caused by what? By the material contamination that we have. That only causes doubts. Like Krishna says, no? Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam tedvandva mohanir mukta bhajante mam dridavvrata. When all our sinful reactions are destroyed, then we become dridavvrata. We attain firm determination. So, we have to clean that material contamination of doubt. How? By chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And following the Krishna consciousness process. That is the second thing. Third, take shelter of Krishna with prayer and submission. We should take shelter of Krishna by offering prayers to Him. Whenever we get a doubt, we should know that doubts are very difficult to destroy. We don't have the power to remove them ourselves. Sometimes even after discussing with some devotees, you still find the doubt doesn't go away. Then we can go to Krishna and pray. Krishna, I don't know, this demoniac doubt has entered my heart and I'm suspecting your scriptures, I'm suspecting you, I'm suspecting Vaishnavas. Please help me. This dangerous doubt is clinging to my heart. So we can offer prayer and submit to Him, and the Lord will guide us to the right people and help us get out of the doubt. Fourth, follow the process and see for yourself how it works. Like when you follow the Krishna consciousness process, it works very powerfully. Just like a road map, isn't it? Like if you have to, say, come to a particular spot, if you have to find out Kunjibari temple, somebody tells me, you know, you come to Swargate, from Swargate you come to MG Road like this, you'll find Narara Towers. So if you find the landmarks, then it's very easy to locate the temple. So the road map helps me. As soon as I find one or two or three landmarks, then I get more and more faith. You can see like that. Follow the process and see yourself how it works. Or like we say, the taste of the pudding is in its eating, isn't it? Like you open a jar of honey and you taste it, then who needs to give you a certificate that honey is sweet? Nobody needs to tell you. You know it for yourself. So when you follow the process, you yourself experience it. Then fifth point, see how the process works for other people. Like, you know, sometimes you get doubts and then you find there are other people who have developed faith and they are marching ahead very happily. There are thousands of people who are able to develop faith, thousands and millions of people. When they have faith, and they are all great personalities, they are very educated, very elevated in spiritual life, and they have been practicing it for many, many long years. If they can develop faith, and myself with insignificant brain, with poor understanding, poor fund of knowledge, why should I think my understanding is better than theirs? So we can see how the process works for others, we can see. And finally, last one, cultivate knowledge and philosophical understanding. Cultivate knowledge and philosophical understanding. And destroy the ignorance by study of scriptures and through philosophical inquiry. So study Shastra and inquire philosophical doubts, and you can destroy the ignorance by that. So anybody who regularly reads the scriptures and cultivates the knowledge and philosophical understanding, gradually the ignorance will be destroyed. It will be dispelled. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. So here are a few announcements.